Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law.
Got miles to go before we sleep.
Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my
home. We will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December.
Oh, Mama, I can hear you a-crying. You're so scared and all alone.
Hey, somebody fix this guy's buckle. I know he can play football.
He's coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
Ladies and gentlemen of Steeler Nation, welcome back to another edition of The Standard is the Standard, the Behind the Steel Curtain podcast, where we have a lot to talk about tonight. We have the Pittsburgh Steelers' Thursday night football loss to the Baltimore Ravens. We have Martavis Bryant's return to action. What that means for the Steelers' offense going into the Monday night football game against the San Diego Chargers in Week 5 action. They're going to the West Coast. We're on the West Coast with my co-host Lance Williams. You're out there in California. How is it this afternoon out there in Cali?
Enjoying the weather and enjoying talking to you fine listeners about Steeler football.
Hey, where else would you rather be right now? Because the Pirates lost last night. Most of Pittsburgh is in a depressed state anyways, so you might as well get geared up for the next Steeler game. Nothing revives the city quite like a Pittsburgh Steelers victory. But before we get talking about the next game, Lance, you weren't able to join us last week as we previewed the Baltimore Ravens game. And I was kind of wanting to get a feel. And you did jump on the air with us, gave your prediction. You did predict the Ravens to win, actually, so kudos to you for that. What were your thoughts? I know you've watched the game several times over. What was your overall takeaway from the game and maybe moving forward for the Pittsburgh Steelers?
I think one of the positives from the offensive side of the ball is they were able to run the ball better than we've seen in some time against the Baltimore Ravens. In fact, I should have done some research on it, but I can't remember the last time I've seen a Steeler back run for over 100 yards against the Ravens. So that's a positive. I think also the way Michael Vick played, not turning the football over, was also a positive. On the defensive side of football, I thought Cameron Hayward's play, the play of the front seven in regards to getting pressure on Joe Flacco with 5 sacks, was a positive as well. Negatives, obviously, in like Mike Tomlin would say, the play calls at the end of the game were not positives. You know, putting Sammy Coates in that position, putting Mike Vick in that position to make that type of play on a 3rd-and-5 call just didn't make any sense to me. On 2 4th-and-1 calls in overtime, not running Le'Veon Bell made no sense to me as well. And I think what you saw by those decisions and not giving Le'Veon Bell the ball, if there's any questions about the offensive identity of this team and what it is, it's a passing team. It's a passing team first that on the underneath of it is the running game, but the running game is not the foundation of this offense. Anytime you don't give it to arguably the best running back in the National Football League in 2 4th-and-1 situations, it begs that question. So there were some positives in the game. It was clearly a game that the Steelers could have won. I don't like to use the term should have won because had they should have won, they would have won. But I think those are the positives and negatives that I took away from last Thursday's game.
Okay, now let me ask you this question because I've been wanting to ask you this. You watched the film so closely. I am not a guy that likes to point blame on a coach or coaches following a win or a loss because ultimately, as we've talked about before on this show, it comes down to the players having to execute. However, if there was ever a time where you could point the finger and say, the coaches really screwed the pooch on this one, would this be a game where you would say that?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm in the same. I feel the same way as you. I think it's easy to play hindsight Monday morning quarterback when it comes to calls. And ultimately, games don't come down to just one call, just like the loss didn't come down to Scobie missing two fourth-quarter free throws. Excuse me, not fourth-quarter, fourth, you know, in the fourth-quarter, excuse me, fourth-quarter free throws. So, or field goals, I should say. But what I will say is this. I criticize the philosophy behind the call. Meaning, when you have Le'Veon Bell and you have two fourth-and-one situations, why don't you give that guy an opportunity to decide the ball game? Try to put the ball in the hands of your best playmakers. Having Mike Vick throw the football in a couple of those situations or roll out in that situation, it just didn't make any sense. You don't put him in a position like that to ultimately fail. I think that's unfair to the player and unfair to the team. So from that perspective, I think the coaches, they didn't have their best day.
No, I would agree with you. And it was difficult for Todd Haley on a short week to try to get Michael Vick ready. They had one shell of a practice. I mean, literally, they had one practice and helmet. There was a walkthrough, and this guy's trying. They're trying to completely change the offense scheme and schematics from flipping the offense to a left-handed quarterback to putting in new packages. I think that you're going to see a totally different offense on Monday night, but we're going to get to that. I do think it was important to remember about this game is, and it may be, this stings with me more than anything else, is that the Baltimore Ravens literally tried to hand them the game. And the Steelers were not able to just grasp it and put their foot on their throat and end it. You think about the fake field goal that was stopped, turnover on downs. I believe they got stopped on fourth down and short two times, maybe three, I know at least two. And so you're looking at that and thinking, these are all key points of the game where if the Steelers had any coulda, shoulda, woulda, you have to wonder if Ben Roethlisberger is healthy, is this game just not completely out of hand? Because Roethlisberger with that secondary, you think, again, I hate speculating, but I have to think to myself and speculate, I guess I'm doing it anyways, I think Roethlisberger would have shredded that defense. I think that they wouldn't have stand a set of chance because you just watched Vic, especially early on, and then in the second half, which was really surprising, it's almost like they were calling a game the game too safe. It was really awkward to watch at times. It looked like Haley was not confident in Vic, and it looked like Vic wasn't confident in himself. He got that swagger back at the end of the second half when they took that big lead into the half, and then it came out and just looked like they completely shut it down. This was a disappointing game, a really disappointing game, I think, for me. And it stings. It stings. It's going to sting for a long time. And Steelers fans are really looking forward to Monday Night Football based on the fact that they want to get that bad taste out of their mouth. I'm sure the players are on board. Do you think this loss can linger and possibly taint any potential chance of them kind of keeping the ship afloat until Ben Roethlisberger returns?
I think because of Ben Roethlisberger and a few of those veterans, James Harrison and others in that locker room, and given the veteran nature of the coaching staff, I don't think it will linger. If it does linger, it shows that this team is a little bit more vulnerable than we thought. But, you know, it is one of those losses that really stings as close as it could sting for a postseason loss. You know, this is one of the most bitter regular season losses you could have at home against a division rival, divisional game, and you lose in that fashion when, you know, can you imagine the momentum they have going into San Diego coming off that Raven game 3-1? I mean, that's the type of win that they gotten that it just propels them into bigger and better things. But I still think that they can recover from it. I still like what they have as a football team on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, I agree with you. Do you think, the way I speculated, do you think if Roethlisberger's in that lineup that the Steelers win the game? And I think they actually win the game handily. You agree or disagree?
I would agree. Given the way that the Steelers were pass protecting in the first half, I think they definitely would have put it on them. They probably would have beat the Ravens, I think, by at least 10 points. And if Ben Roethlisberger had have played, I think they probably would have been favored by more than 7.5 points.
Yeah, and so we do have a phone call, a caller. If you want to call in, if you're listening live, you want to call in, you can. It's 347-850-8581. Again, that's 347-850-8581. You'll talk to our producer, Chris Carter. He'll get you queued up, and we'll get you on the air. Our first caller, as always, he seems like our first segment every single time we get on the air. It's Vito from New Jersey. He wants to talk about Monday Night Football. What's up, Vito?
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
Hey, Vito.
I'm great.
I think the positive going into Monday night's game is how much better the team looks now than they did a week ago, because I think they're going to be better prepared. I think that short week, even though they should have won, you know, remember, most people don't get beat by another team. They beat themselves, and that's exactly what happened, because the defense, I thought, played very, very well. They kept the Steelers in the game. They made a lot of big plays. And I just think, like you said, Vic was a little nervous. He made some good plays at times, and sometimes they got a little bit too conservative. My thought is this: 4th and 1, 4th and 2, what about D'Angelo Williams? Why aren't we bringing him in on short downs and giving him a crack and see what he could do? I mean, you got Bell in there, and Williams has looked great while Bell was out. Why not mix it up? Maybe let Bell do one. If he doesn't make it, the next time bring Williams in and see if he could do it. Why do we have to take a shot and throw the ball to Antonio Brown when, you know, Vic's one of those sidearm throwers, and it's not Antonio Brown's fault that he didn't catch it. That chemistry's just not there yet. It's too soon. So my question is, you know what? We got Williams. Why not give him a shot at it? Give Bell one shot. If he doesn't make it, next time give it to Williams. Give him a shot. Do it on the ground. Let's see what happens. But you know what? At the end of the day, there's no excuse for the kicker missing two kicks either. This is a professional guy. He's getting paid. He needs to do his job. I mean, in life, if you're not doing your job and you go to a job every day, sooner or later they're going to get rid of you. They don't need you. So I know he was hurt, so then he should have said something about it so that they wouldn't have even given him the attempt to make the field goal. Those are my thoughts. Tell me what you think.
Go ahead, Lance.
So in terms of, you know, giving Williams a shot, I like the philosophy of running the football in that situation, but you got to go with your Mariano Rivera, so to speak, and that's Le'Veon Bell. You got to go with your best player. I definitely agree in regards to Scobie. You know, you got to make kicks. Your job is to make kicks. I don't want to hear about the injury afterwards. It doesn't matter. You got released. It doesn't make it any better. You're just released now. It is what it is. And one thing I did leave out as a negative from the game was obviously the run defense was bad. I think some of that was schematic, but the run defense was obviously bad, and that was a surprise for me. I didn't think that the Ravens would be able to run the ball that well against them, considering they hadn't run the ball well all year long.
Yeah, it's certainly one of those situations where people say, you know, the defense looked good. Yeah, they got 5 sacks. They were all around Flacco, and they gave up over 190 yards on the ground, mind you. So good in one aspect, really, really bad in another. And let me say the tackling was horrendous. And we're going to talk about that. I know that, Lance, you're going to talk about this specifically in your defensive keys. That's going to be a big key against San Diego when you go over there, because if you don't make tackles, you could be in for a long day defensively. But I think that what people forget is that D'Angelo Williams knew what was coming. He knew that once Bell came back into the fold, he was basically going to just be the backup. And a lot of people were shocked at his production in the first 2 weeks. I was one of those people. I was expecting him to average maybe like 60, 70 yards a game. He puts up over 100 in week one, and I think he was close to 100 in week two. Nonetheless, Le'Veon Bell is a different beast. Le'Veon Bell is the best running back in the National Football League for a reason, his versatility. It was shocking to not see them give the ball to him in a key situation like that. But I think that D'Angelo Williams' role on the Steelers moving forward is going to change, and Todd Haley talked about that today as the coordinator spoke with media following practice. And he did say that he wanted to get D'Angelo Williams involved more. You saw, and we broke this play down on Behind the Steel Curtain film room today, where they were in a really unique package. And I'm not even sure what they would even call this. It was a shotgun formation. Le'Veon Bell was in the left sidecar to Michael Vick. And then they actually had D'Angelo Williams in the pistol behind Vick. You think about both of those players in the backfield, you have a ton of options in terms of play action, reading the defensive systems and what they're going to do, running D'Angelo Williams, Bell out of the backfield, Vic on a quarterback keeper, bootleg pass, a lot of options on that type of style. And so we're definitely going to be talking about that as we move forward. Lance, do you think that D'Angelo Williams should be getting more carries in the Steelers' offense, or do you think it's like, hey, look, Bell's the bell cow, no pun intended. He's the guy we're going to go with.
Yeah, I think he should be in the mix. I don't think he should wear Bell out. But I think Bell should average anywhere between 18 to 22 touches a game. I think if you're not giving it to him that many times, you're bailing out the opposite defense. He's the better player. He's a superior guy. He's the top running back in the National Football League. He's a matchup nightmare. You just have to figure out how to incorporate both of those guys, and that's the job of the coordinator.
Exactly, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how they utilize him, especially with Michael Vick at quarterback, because Vick brings a dynamic that Ben Roethlisberger certainly doesn't. Roethlisberger is semi-mobile, not as mobile as he used to be earlier in his career. He's able to escape pressure in the pocket, but in no way, shape, or form is he mobile. Vick, as he proved, even at his age, on Thursday night, is still able of getting out of the pocket, making plays with his legs. He was very smart with that, too. I was glad he didn't take any extra hits, which he is prone to do that throughout his career. It'll be worth watching. Vito, thanks for the phone call. We appreciate it. Anyone else that would like to call in and talk about whether it's the upcoming game against the Chargers, the last week's loss to the Baltimore Ravens, anything that's Steelers-related, it's 347-850-8581. Again, 347-850-8581. Now, before we get to the keys to the San Diego Chargers game, Lance, I want to talk about Martavis Bryant. Martavis Bryant is back in the lineup. He's back from suspension. And we know just from the very brief preseason action with Michael Vick that Vick likes Martavis Bryant. And he has his special targets. He loves Le'Veon Bell. You can see that when they play. He looks for Bell almost before he looks for some receivers. And we know that when Martavis Bryant's in there, and I don't blame him, it's when a guy 6'4 can run like a gazelle and jump out of a gym, you're going to want to throw him the ball too. How do you see Martavis Bryant impacting the offense, not only for Michael Vick, but also for other players on the roster?
I mean, when you put that type of ball player in your lineup, he dictates coverage. I mean, you can't play certain coverages against them with Martavis Bryant. I mean, you're never going to see teams in any coverage look like a zero coverage look with no safety help over top. You can't do it. So it's going to eliminate certain coverages. You're probably going to get a lot of cover two, cover four. I don't even think that you can play a lot of cover one or cover three against them because you need help vertically to deal with the vertical speed and that element that he brings. So what you're going to get is, I think, a lot of defined coverages that will make it very easy for Mike Vick. I think he takes a safety out of the box, which makes it easier on the running game because you're going to run against seven consistently. He's just the type of guy with his physical ability that dictates aspects of the game, and he doesn't even have to get the ball. You just put that guy on the field, things change. And I think also we're going to see predominantly that the Steelers are going to be an 11 personnel team. You know, that's a three wide receiver set. And I think they're going to be even more explosive than before, and it's really going to aid Mike Vick. It's going to clear up the coverages, and it's going to give him a huge toy to play with.
And talk about a welcome sight, because the way I look at it is with Roethlisberger out, Vick can use as many weapons as he can get, and Martavis Bryant coming back is going to help a lot. I think it's going to help – if it's going to help anyone, it's going to help Antonio Brown. The whole – four games that Bryant has been out, if you watch these games close and if you watch the All-22, Antonio Brown has had to, and he's great. He's the best wide receiver in terms of route running, in terms of knowing everything about the offense, especially when Roethlisberger's under center. But he's had to work his tail off to get open on a lot of these plays because they're just bracketing coverage on his side. They're always keeping a safety over the top. But Brown is able to get open, but it's only going to open up more options for him, especially in the underneath routes, if they're able to get Martavis deep. It's going to come down to the offensive line. So we're going to talk about some keys now. Let's go with defensive first. We're talking about the upcoming game against the San Diego Chargers. Some defensive keys to success. What are they? Doesn't matter how many. what do the Steelers have to do on defense to stop Phillip Rivers and company on Monday Night Football?
We talked earlier, Jeff, and listeners, I shared with Jeff a couple of themes when it comes to this particular ball game. And the first one is kill the head and the body will fall. You have to put pressure on Phillip Rivers. It's a must because Phillip Rivers is a top seven guy. And if you give Phillip Rivers time to dissect the field, there's no way that they can handle the San Diego Chargers on the back end. You just can't afford to give guys as good as him that much time back there. So you've got to put pressure on an offense, in my opinion, that's struggling in pass protection. They rank 25th in sacks allowed with 12. They're 24th in adjusted sack rate. And by turn, the Steelers, on the other hand, are doing an excellent job at getting pressure, as evidenced by that game against the Ravens. The Steelers right now are 4th in sacks with 14th, and they're 6th in ASR. I think when you look at the matchup and trying to get pressure, and you look at King Dunlop, you look at Orlando Franklin, you look at Watt, those guys are not having the greatest years in pass protection. Dunlop rates 16th, but I don't think he's played to that grade, and these grades are according to Pro Football Focus. Franklin is 71st, Watt is 32nd, and they were all banged up last week and didn't play. The injury report came out initially today. I'm sure they'll update it tomorrow and Saturday, and we'll have more information as to if any of those guys are going to play. And when they get replaced, Harrison, the replacement, 42nd. In terms of pass protection, Wiggins doesn't have a ranking, and Robinson, the center, is 21st. So if you look at all of those guys, they're all average in regards to pass protection. So I think the clear advantage in terms of getting pressure on a quarterback falls with the Pittsburgh Steelers. The second thing, and this is the biggest in this game, is you have to tackle the catch. The San Diego Chargers have the most passing yards in the National Football League with 1,248. 775 of those, 62%, are yards after the catch, which is second in the National Football League. So it's a short, controlled passing game that you have to tackle. Now, he will take some shots up the field with Malcolm Floyd and with Keenan Allen, but you have to tackle the catch. Speaking of Keenan Allen, Cal Bear alum, 33 catches, 387 yards, 143 of those are yards after the catch. Danny Woodhead, he has 143 additional yards after the catch. Danny Woodhead, 16 catches for 203 yards, an additional 222 yards after the catch. 13.9 yards after the catch. Second in the National Football League. So what it says is you have to tackle these guys. If you don't tackle these guys, you will lose. And last but not least, if you want to get cracked or if you don't want to get cracked, you've got to fill in the gaps. Gap integrity was not very good against the Ravens. Danny Woodhead is a guy that loves to maneuver in and out of space and get through the cracks and deal with that. He's excellent at that. So you've got to be gap sound. And Melvin Gordon, top end speed is great. He's a guy that, you know, you have to stay gap sound or these guys can gouge you and hurt you. So I think the three keys, kill the head and the body will fall, tackle the catch, and if you don't want to get cracked, fill in the gap.
Was that your first rhyme of the season? I think that was, wasn't it? I mean, you haven't done that this year. In 2015, I think that's the first rhyme. That gives me a good feeling. I mean, I'm kind of pumped for this game now. Because man, the first rhyme of the season. He's bringing it back, folks. If you're new listeners, he always gave us a rhyme last year. One of his keys was a rhyme. First one. Make sure you listen to that, all right? So Phillip Rivers is a unique beast. The guy looks like a sitting duck. He's got those two huge knee braces on. I mean, he looks like – he moves like Dan Marino did at the end of his career, which is not very well. Yet he finds the most weird, awkward ways to complete these passes. Like, I've never seen so many dead duck passes that look like just being thrown up into the air fall right into the hands of, well, now Antonio Gates is coming back from suspension as well. Let's not forget about that. He's been a Steeler killer in his career. But, I mean, it's incredible. And the fact that they have so many yards after the catch, I think sometimes kind of the cut on Phillip Rivers, but you can't do that. That would be like saying the same thing about Ben Roethlisberger with Antonio Brown and all those short passes that go for big distance for the Steelers. My question for you is, if you said this is your first key, is you got to kill the head, which is Phillip Rivers, do you think that the Steelers are going to be able to do let me rephrase it. Do you think the Steelers are going to be able to get pressure and get to Phillip Rivers without blitzing so many times like they did against Baltimore? Because they had to blitz 20 out of 38 dropbacks, they blitzed Joe Flacco, which is sending more than five players, according to Pro Football Focus. Do you think they're capable of doing that, especially, well, now with Ryan Trujillo back in the fold, Daniel McCullers is going to be playing? I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I don't think that – I love Tuitt and I love Cameron Hayward, but I don't think they are just guys that you can pin your hopes on. They put their hand in the ground, they get after it, and they get to the quarterback. I just don't think those – you know, they aren't those guys. They're not J.J. Watt-ish or Aaron Donald-ish or Geno Atkins-ish. They're going to bring the house. When you look at that offensive line play, especially if there's a mix of some of the backups, even with Dunlop and Franklin, it's not a good unit. They have to be looking at it with the thought, we can really get after these boys. And I think they are really going to be aggressive in trying to get after Phillip Rivers.
As they should, because Phillip Rivers, you talk about the big plays, you talk about how he just seems to always get the job done. He's also very prone to turnovers. And I think that is a key. They've got to create turnovers. They have been doing that the past few weeks. There was the big interception of Nick Foles at a crucial time in week three in St. Louis. There was the interception of Flacco by Ross Cockrell and a wonderful fumble recovery by Cockrell. We're going to talk about the cornerback situation here in a second, but I like your keys. You ready for the offensive keys?
I am.
All right, it's simple. It's all about the offensive line. I think that the offensive line, the San Diego defense does not frighten me whatsoever. They have a great nose tackle. The defensive line is fairly active. Vic just needs time. And I think that the ultimate goal should be just balance. Stay balanced. They did that, I thought, very well against Baltimore. I think that they could have been more successful in the passing game if they trusted Vic to throw the ball more. But what Michael Vick brings to the team is a versatility that, like I said earlier in the show, that Roethlisberger doesn't have. And he is still able to run the football. If you watch the first game, the Baltimore Ravens, on certain possessions, certain downs and distances, they would leave a linebacker to spy Michael Vick. You do that enough, and you get good pass protection, it's going to equate to someone, whether it's Bryant, whether it's Brown, whether it's Bell out of the backfield, they're going to get open, and it could be a big play. So that fact, Michael Vick, I think you're going to see a lot of shotgun. Naturally, you would. They did it against Baltimore. I think you'll see it again. I think they need to run the football. I think that's first key. You need to run the football. Get Bell going early. You need to get D'Angelo Williams some looks if you want to spell Bell, but you don't want to be so run-heavy that all of a sudden people don't think about the pass. That's key one, run the football. Number two, get 84 involved. Antonio Brown not being in the game, essentially, against the Ravens and his 5-for-50 streak and all that stuff, which ended against the Ravens on Thursday Night Football, it's all secondary. The fact that he didn't get the ball, that's primary. He is maybe your best playmaker with the ball in his hands. You have to feed the beast. You've got to get 84 involved, because if not, it makes the team way too one-dimensional. Now that Martavis Bryant is back, I obviously understand that that's going to be a factor in terms of coverage, but you've got to get 84 the ball. And lastly, my third key, stretch the field. I want to say that Michael Vick didn't attempt a pass of over 20 yards, maybe the entire game. And if he did, it was only, you can count them on one hand, how many times he did that. The Steelers are a team that is still built to throw the deep ball, whether it's the Darius Hayward Bay, now Martavis Bryant back. The Steelers need to take the top off of that defense. They need to have them respect that deep ball, which is going to open up underneath routes, especially the guys like Heath Miller. Go deep, test that secondary. Those are the three keys. And my first one is balance, or stay balanced, run the football, get Antonio Brown involved, and send some guys deep and let Vic air it out. Vic still has a tremendous deep pass, and I'm not sure why they didn't utilize that more against Baltimore. However, I think it's appropriate to do that against San Diego on the West Coast. What do you think about that? Anything you would add to those keys?
To your point about running the football and me looking at the San Diego Chargers, there's one name in particular that I think that they can attack, and that's number 98, the nose tackle, Sean Lysamore. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. That's a guy that they can get after, and that's a guy that I actually think Cody Wallace matches up very favorably against, and there's a guy that I think that they can attack in the run game. I think Corey Leggett is a little more difficult to deal with when they bring him and they play him at that zero technique or that one technique. But when you have 98 in the game, I think you're going to see them get really aggressive and attack them. I think Brandon Flowers, if he plays, is another guy I think who's a candy bar in terms of in the secondary that they can get after. One thing I noticed also is that the linebackers aren't good in coverage, so that spells. I think the Steelers could have some success with Le'Veon Bell and Heath Miller. I just think the key to the game overall will be the defense's ability to tackle. I think they will be able to score against San Diego if they pass protect. One thing that we haven't talked about, and you didn't talk about in your keys, is the new place kicker. And what impact will the new place kicker have on this ball game?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, people often forget place kicking. People that think the place kicking is not important haven't watched the Steelers this year. I mean, there is a contingent of people that think if Sean Spicer were healthy, the Steelers very well could be undefeated. And it's tough to argue that. I think week one might be, that's a little sketchy. The defense didn't play well that game. But against Baltimore, if Scobie makes just one of those kicks, you think it's over. It's lights out. They win that game. They're 3-1 heading into San Diego, on top of the world and right behind the Cincinnati Bengals in the division. Yeah, you're bringing in a guy that's never made a kick, never even kicked a ball in a regular season NFL game. How confident are you, or I should say, how trusting are you of this kid? And if you were the coach, what would you do if you have that 45-yarder, a light wind, you need to make a kick, or it's fourth and one, 45-yarder. What are you doing? You send him out there, you going for it?
Hey, you're paying the guy to kick for you. Send him out there. I mean, you got to send him out there. I mean, that's why you're paying the guy. And you're going to have some trust and some faith that this guy can get it done, because you can't keep replacing kickers presumably every single week and incurring more, you know, dead cap space. So you got to trust one of these guys. And maybe Scobie being injured on top of him missing the kicks was the real reason that they got rid of him, that he wasn't healthy anyway. And maybe he lost his confidence. So, yeah, you got to put the guy out there. I mean, you signed the guy to kick for you. You got to let him kick, period.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. Now, you brought up the candy bar. Now, you say the candy bar. For those that don't know, the candy bar was something that Antonio Brown actually said before playing the Philadelphia Eagles about one Mr. Brandon Boykin. Now, on the Steelers, he said that he was the candy bar. He was the go-to attack matchup that they should be attacking. You bring up Brandon Boykin, and a lot of people have a lot of questions. And I know that we've talked at length about him off of the air via text message. This is more of a question about Cortez Allen. But Brandon Boykin's going to be tied in it, so bear with me here if you're listening. Cortez Allen was a full participant in practice. Now, he was a full participant last week, and then he re-aggravated in the injury. So he was a full participant again. We're going to see how that knee responds tomorrow and see if he'll be listed on the practice injury report, the final injury report, which will be Friday or Saturday with the Monday night game. Let's say Cortez Allen is healthy to play. What do you do with your secondary? Because right now you have a group that's not too bad. They're playing well together. They're gelling. You've got William Gay, Antoine White. Okay, go ahead.
Let me stop you. He is healthy. Right. So
right now
we see what they're going to do. He's going to aggravate his knee by tomorrow. listeners, by the time you hear this show, he will have aggravated his knee getting some Häagen-Dazs from the refrigerator. He's on the way out. They don't want this guy to play. He's on the way out. It's a Cockrell, Gay, Boy, you know, Boykin, Blake. Those are going to be the guys moving forward. He's out of the rotation. The frustrating thing about it is, and it's not what they paid him, because, you know, you pay guys all the time and sometimes they underperform. I mean, that's just a part of the business. The point is, none of the aforementioned guys are great. So if any of these guys emerged as a really, 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 really good corner, it would help this defense immensely. All these guys are just guys. And there's no guy. And the thought was Cortez Allen was going to be the guy, and unfortunately it looks like he isn't. And I think Tomlin and the team are going to play with the injury report all year long for that guy, and I think he's on the way out.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree. And you look at him, and there's going to be an article coming up on Behind the Steel Curtain about what the Steelers should do with him. He could actually be cut, and I'll have to look up the dead money and how much they would owe him if they do release him from his contract early. But I still believe that the signing of Cortez Allen was a knee-jerk reaction to not signing Keenan Lewis. And if you think about it, those were two guys that were both vying for that cornerback position. It was in, I want to say, was it 2013, or did Allen leave that year, or Lewis leave that year? I think it might have been either 2012 or 2013. Correct me if I'm wrong. And really, Cortez Allen was, Lewis left, and he went to New Orleans. And they were like, well, we've got to save face somehow, and so they just threw the money at Cortez, who had a decent 2013 season, mind you. And then, well, the wheels just fell off last year. But I think Cortez Allen, I agree with you. I think he's on the way out. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a helmet this week. If he stays healthy, for some reason, Carnell Lake, I guess Keith Butler, I can't speak of him because he's so fresh to the defensive coordinator, and Mike Tomlin, they like him. I wouldn't be shocked if you see Brandon Boykin inactive and Cortez Allen getting a helmet. I'm just telling you. I don't think he's going to be up there in the starting three. I think it's going to be William Gay, Antoine Blake to start, and Ross Cockle is going to fill in at the nickel. And they'll probably move William Gay to the inside. But I wouldn't be surprised if they give him one more shot. That's all I'm saying. You might disagree. I know you disagree. But I wouldn't be surprised if they give him one last shot to try and just save face. But then it brings up, you know, with this whole Brandon Boykin issue. I mean, what are your thoughts on this guy? I mean, they traded a draft pick, and the people that think the 60% of snaps is playing into this are way crazy. But what do you think about Brandon Boykin? Because now all of a sudden Ross Cockle is ahead of him and on the depth chart, and he's getting more playing time, and they didn't have to trade anybody to get him. What are your thoughts on Boykin moving forward?
Well, let me go back to Cortez now, and you asked about the dead money. If they were to cut him today, the dead money charge would be $5.4 million, and this is according to overthecap.com. The cap savings would be $1.58 million. Now, when you look at what he's owed for this year, his cap number is $6.9 million. He's already been paid a roster bonus of $3 million. He's not going anywhere. That roster bonus, which he got paid on the fifth day of the league year, I think is going to keep him there. I don't think they're going to give him that $3 million to cut him by week five. So I don't think that's going to happen. So take that with a grain of salt, listeners. In terms
Hold on. So before you go to Boykin, what if they you talked about them toying with him. He's a guy that they could all of a sudden, he has a knee injury, he's on IR for the rest of the year. What was his dead number if they cut him at the end of the year? If he's a June 1st, did it say that on the website?
Yes. So this is. So let me do a little work here. Let me shift it, and I'm glad you said that.
So they let him ride out this season, whether he's bouncing on and off the active roster, or maybe he finds his way to injured reserve. They wait. They cut him at the end of the year. He's a June 1st designated.
So actually, let me update it. So I updated. So with the information of what I gave you, listeners, was pre-June 1st. Post-June 1st, the dead money charge for this year would be you would get $1.35 million would accelerate. So he has 3 years left on his deal, 2016, 2017, 2018. So basically that's $1.3 million accelerating. You know, you multiply that by three, that's the dead money charge. So that's about 2.6, 1.3, 2.6. That's, you know, probably like 3.9. That's pretty much where it is. But I think him getting that $3 million roster bonus is really going to protect him. I don't think they want to get rid of him after they paid him $3 million. So I think they're going to make him earn it. And I think Boykin and Cockrell are luxury for them until he gets right, if he gets right.
Yeah. But at least Cortez Allen's not like a Lamar Woodley dead money situation where they were looking at, what was it, $8 million in dead money when they released him, and he's still on the books until next year. I think his money's finally gone. So the Steelers' secondary is worth talking about, in my opinion, because next year, and I hate to talk about the future when we're right in the heart of the season, but they're going to have some really difficult issues and decisions to make. William Gay's a free agent. Antoine Blake's a free agent. They have restricted rights on a restricted free agent in Ross Cockrell as they signed him to a one-year deal. And then you have guys like Brandon Boykin, who's here for his last year of his initial deal with the Philadelphia Eagles, and he's a free agent. So let's assume that Cortez Allen is not in the mix. He's gone, and you're the general manager. Who are you trying to bring back? Thinking, keep in the back of your mind, Senquez Golson, the second-round draft pick in this year's draft, will be back on the team. What do you think? The Steelers, if you're the GM, what would you do in terms of the secondary?
I'd draft somebody high in the first or second round again. I'd bring back Cockrell, and I'd bring back Gay. So that gives me the new draft pick, Golson, Cockrell, Gay, and I might sign another veteran. So that means Cortez Allen would be
out of the
mix. That's
a good plan. That's a good plan, and, you know, a lot of people are really down on, and we're talking about secondary, we're talking about draft options. If you were to pinpoint right now, after the first quarter, and this is an appropriate discussion, I think, to have even at this point in the season, after the first quarter, two questions. If you were to grade the secondary, we're talking safeties and cornerbacks, what grade would you give them? And looking at the safeties they have on the team, and Will Allen's playing great, but he's not getting any younger. Do you think that the Steelers might be looking safety really, really early in the 2016 draft to try to find someone? Because it doesn't look like they trust Tremarco Thomas to be that guy.
Yeah, I don't know. High? I mean, what would you consider high? You consider high third round, fourth round? Is that
safety?
Still considered
I'm talking,
high?
I'm talking 1 to 3.
I could see a safety around 3 or 4. He'd have to be a really dynamic guy to be a first-round safety. And he'd have to be like the safety from Seattle, Earl Thomas, that type of player. He'd have to be in the ilk of – what's the young man that came back from leukemia from the Kansas City Chiefs? Is that Eric Reed?
Barry.
Is that his name?
Eric Barry.
Eric Barry. That type of guy. And I'm not versed well enough with the college game to suggest that there's a safety out there like that. But versatile safeties almost have as much impact on your defense as really good corners. Just because when you have really versatile safeties that can play in space and cover, you can do a lot of different things coverage-wise. So to have two very athletic guys, if Shamarco ever plays well, or if you put a really good guy with Mike Mitchell and have Shamarco as a backup, then I think that improves your secondary immensely. So I don't think first or second round, third round, I could see. Like third or fourth is, you know, what I'm kind of thinking when I think of safety, if they consider that next year.
Okay, and what grade would you give the Steelers secondary after the first quarter of the 2015 season? Because coming into this year, everyone was talking about the secondary. That was going to be the primary focus of the defense. They're going to go as far as the secondary takes them. Think about those four games. Think about their performance quickly. You're going to label them a grade. You're the teacher. What are you giving them?
I'd give them a B. I think they played well enough in three of the four games to get you wins. Allen comes up with a big play against the Rams. Cockrell comes up with a couple of big plays against the Ravens. So I think they played well enough in spots. You know, I definitely say a B. Not much of a threat in the San Francisco 49er game. I think this game against San Diego will be a significant test. But I give them a B minus. I think they played well enough to where, you know, you could win those games. The only game I would say, you know, they got roasted and kind of exposed was against Brady. And Brady gets basically everybody, and he's definitely going to get a young defense in the first game.
Yeah, and I think that after the first quarter, I would agree with your grade, by the way. I think after the first quarter, I think it's a lot of people, we're doing grades on BehindTheSteelCurtain.com right now for the first quarter. There's only one other guy I want to ask you about it, and it's on the defense, and you're a defensive guy, and I know that you focus on that when you watch these games over and over again. It's really hard for me to get a feel for this. Most of the players, if you watch the games, you focus on one thing or the other, you're really looking at their body of work. And you look at Bud Dupree, I've been extremely surprised with his play through the first quarter. And guys like Stephon, too, man, he is really coming into his own. It could be a real big monster for the Steelers. We've talked about him ad nauseum on this show before, but Jarvis Jones, and here's where I get into this. I know you think he's a bust, and now trust me, I'm starting to lean that way. did you watch the Mike Tomlin press conference, or at least listen to it this week at all?
No, I have it queued up, but I haven't listened to it.
Okay, well, he's asked about Jarvis Jones at this press conference, and it's at the very end, and he essentially says that he's been very happy with Jarvis Jones's play. He says he's been very strong, violent hands, you know, all those great Mike Tomlinisms that he throws around during press conferences. But then he mentions that he hasn't been called to rush the passer as much, that they've been rushing more predominantly with the left outside linebackers, being Arthur Notes and Bud Dupree, than they have the right outside linebackers, or specifically Jarvis Jones. Do you buy that? And if so, like, what would you grade Jarvis Jones after four games? Because he's been pretty invisible when you watch the game back. What do you think?
I'll be honest. It's tough for me to say because this is how it works for me, at least when I'm watching defense. I'm watching the play and seeing how things develop. And just as, you know, as I'm watching it, it helps when something flashes that catches your attention. So, you know, you're watching the game, you'll see Hayward beat an offensive lineman, or you'll see an offensive lineman get beat consistently. You're waiting to see these glimpses and flashes. At least what they do for me is they make me rewind the play or possibly look at a guy play for another couple of plays and see just what he's getting done. I'm not necessarily seeing the flashes that would lead me to further investigate Jarvis Jones more, which says to me he's probably operating effectively in his role in the defense, but he's not making any splash plays. So from a coach's perspective, that may be a good thing because they know the calls ultimately. They know that maybe we're just asking Jarvis to do this, and he's executing it very well. I'm looking at it looking for flash. So I can understand how Tomlin's comments may sound coach speakish or coach speaky when he's talking about it and Jarvis is actually having more impact than is necessarily discernible to my eye. But he's not flashing on the screen. It's not flashy. It doesn't jump out. You don't walk away watching the game going, Jarvis is kicking that guy's ass. None of that at least appears visible to my untrained eye. So I would say Jarvis is at a C. He's just the guy executing his assignments in the role of the defense, no more, no less, no splash plays. Now, if you throw in his first round grade, you might take the grade down to C minus D plus because you have the expectation that a first rounder would be more than just a role player in a defense. He's actually somebody that flashes and makes plays.
Yeah, I mean, I watched the games back as well, and I look for Jarvis Jones because I've always kind of been a Jarvis Jones supporter. I thought that, you know, in the first his rookie season, he wasn't supposed to play that much. They weren't expecting James Harrison to go to the Bengals. In his second season, he came on strong with, he looked a lot like Bud Dupree has this year in terms of getting 2 sacks in 3 games, and then he gets hurt, and he's done for most of the year. And so everyone was thinking, like, okay, his arrow is pointing up, as Mike Tomlin would say, when in reality, he's got to make some plays. And it speaks volumes to me when you look at the snap totals from the Baltimore game, and I wrote this article for BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. When the game mattered, when it mattered the most in overtime and in the fourth quarter, Jarvis Jones wasn't on the field. Out of the 4 starting outside linebackers, that's Arthur Motes, that's James Harrison, that's Bud Dupree, and himself, obviously, he played the least amount of snaps out of everybody. In fact, it was Bud Dupree and James Harrison that played the most. It seems like the coaching staff is gearing towards this rookie-veteran combination, and I think Bud Dupree's success is directly tied to James Harrison being opposite him and protections being thrown his way. But still, that's got to say something to you, doesn't it, Lance? I mean, as a coaching staff, when the game's on the line, if they're not putting you on the field, that's a message. That's clear, pretty clear to me.
Now, dare I say I'm going to play Jarvis Jones apologist, or I'm going to rationalize why that may be the case. If you need to get pressure on a quarterback, he may not be your guy if you have a Bud Dupree that you can put in his stead. He may not be the guy. Or, excuse me, a James Harrison, right?
Right.
He may not be that guy. What I have seen Jarvis do well this year is flow down the line of scrimmage in the run game and be pretty solid maintaining the edge and the perimeter in the running game and being a lot better against the run. He seems to be more physical in that regard. But in regards to getting pressure, I just don't see it. I don't think he's that quick twitch, bend, transfer, you know, speed, power to explosion type of guy. You don't see it. And in fact, listeners, I challenge you to watch Bud Dupree, watch Jarvis Jones, and just look at the difference in the power, the explosion, and the quick twitch. It looks like a first rounder, and it looks like a fifth rounder. He just doesn't have first round physical ability, in my opinion.
No, Bud Dupree's first step off the line of scrimmage is something special, and it's only going to get better. I mean, you watch that guy. I mean, it was – I remember I texted you during the game against Baltimore, and it was a play, and I can't remember. It was in the second half, and Bud Dupree looked like he got shot out of a cannon off of the snap. The right tackle had no chance, absolutely no chance at all, and he was around the end, forced Flacco to step up, and I want to say they got a sack because of that pressure on the outside. And Bud Dupree is a big, big man. People don't think like that. He's 6'4". He's at least 240. He's fast. I mean, that guy is a specimen. And Jarvis Jones, well, he's not. He's a guy that got a lot of sacks. He got a lot of sacks at Georgia, but he just doesn't have that look. Think about all the great outside linebackers. If there's one that he resembles physique-wise, it's Joey Porter. And he doesn't have near the upper body strength that Joey Porter had. Joey Porter was solid, man. I mean, there's a reason the man would walk around with his jersey up to show off his abs when he's fighting Cleveland Browns at midfield. I mean, come on now. He's no Joey Porter, but Joey Porter's doing the best that he can as a coach. It's going to be interesting to see, in my opinion, how much they use James Harrison down the stretch here in the next few games, because Harrison has proven that he's still capable of getting the job done. I don't think he has the endurance that he used to. That's natural. He's going to be 36 or 37 years old this year. But Bud Dupree, poof. People cut on the Pittsburgh Steelers for taking outside linebackers as often as they do, and Bud Dupree looks like he's living up to the billing, and I'm excited. I'm really excited about that. Go ahead.
And I was going to say, I think Steeler fans should be excited that King Dunlop is playing left tackle you better hope and pray that he comes back either of the left tackles, because they can get after him. You know, I think he's a guy, and Franklin, if those two guys play, you know, I think the Steelers could have a party in the backfield. And, you know, hopefully Jarvis can get off on one of those guys.
Yeah, I want to say that he's the only member of the front seven that has yet to register a sack in 2015. And that includes the backup linebacker, Sean Spence, who has already registered a sack. Well, now check that. I don't think Steve McClendon, he might have a half a sack. But he's been a heck of a lot closer than Jarvis Jones has, so I'll say that. Nonetheless, let's get right to it. Let's see if I can wake up our producer, Chris Carter, here. CC, are you with us?
Oh, yeah, I'm still here, man. You know, just manning the phone lines.
All right, very good. Hey, we're gonna do predictions, baby bus. Are you ready for yours? Or we'll give you some time. We'll go to Lance first. Lance, now's prediction time. We're making people wait till the end of the show. San Diego Chargers, Pittsburgh Steelers, Monday Night Football. It's got a good ring to it. What do you think the game's going to pan out to be?
I apologize, Steelers fans, for my prediction last week of 24-20. I was only a point off. I hate that I was almost that. I hate that I was basically kind of dead on. It didn't take the look that I thought it would be. So let's just hope I am as good. I heard that. That I am as good as I was last week, but in the affirmative. I'm going to amend what I text you off air, Jeff, and I'm going to go with 31-28 Pittsburgh Steelers.
All right.
I think the Steelers, and I don't think it's just symptomatic of the Steelers, tackling is bad all over the NFL. It's absolutely atrocious. Tackling is bad, place kicking is bad, and offensive line play is bad. It's bad everywhere. There are a couple of teams that do those reasonably well, but it's just not at really, in my opinion, at an NFL standard, really high. I don't think the Steelers will tackle well enough consistently in the game. I think Danny Woodhead is going to present a lot of issues and a lot of problems. And I think it's a secondary that if San Diego can block it up, Phillip Rivers can get after. With all that said, I think it's going to be a lot of points scored. That's why I think the Steelers win 31-28, because I think the Steelers are going to be able to do whatever they want to do offensively, particularly run the ball, run an inside zone. I think they're going to have their way, especially with number 98. He plays a lot of snaps. I think they're going to be able to run the ball and be able to get a lot of what they want. And I think after a week of preparation, I think Vic will play like the Vic we saw in the first half. So I like 31-28. And the new plays kicker will have to make a kick to win the game.
Oof, I hope not. I hope not. I mean, not Dave, not for Boswell's sake, for my personal health, I hope not. I'm going to go next, CC, saving the best for last. I know who you're going to pick, Chris. So it doesn't matter. like, you know who I'm going to pick. Anyways, I definitely think that the Pittsburgh Steelers on the road is a tough matchup. They don't play well on the West Coast. I do think the extended break from Thursday Night Football is going to aid them, especially Michael Vick. I don't think you can say enough about the return of Martavis Bryant to the lineup and what he means to this offense, from schematic standpoint to the way the defense has to play to opening up Antonio Brown and just giving them that dynamic deep threat that they have been missing. I think that the Pittsburgh Steelers defensively match up extremely well. It just comes down to, can you get to Phillip Rivers? He takes a beating, and that guy takes a lot of hits, but you've got to take him down or cause those rush throws. I think they're going to be able to do that. If they're going to start blitzing the way that they did against Baltimore, they better have their blitz pickup ready to go, because if you know one thing about Keith Butler, he's sending it from all angles. He's sending every single player on that defense. And let's not forget Ryan Chazier is going to be back in the lineup. So you talk about Danny Woodhead, you talk about Antonio Gates. Ryan Chazier is every bit as athletic. As long as that shoulder's healthy, I think they're going to be fine. I think the Pittsburgh Steelers win this one. I think it's going to be a little bit lower scoring. I think that it's going to be a very slow start to the game on both sides of the ball, and then they're going to settle in. I have the Pittsburgh Steelers winning 28-20. I don't think the Chargers are going to be able to move the ball. They're very depleted on the offensive line and at wide receiver. I like the Steelers to win 28-20, moving the record to 3-2, heading into that really good home game against the Cardinals in Week 6. Chris, go ahead. What do you think?
Man, we're pretty similar on our scores. I'm saying 31-20. I do see that Phillip Rivers is going to make some plays down the field. I think that Keenan Allen, he's a bad man when you leave him a one-on-one coverage. And we'll go over the preview tomorrow with our film room, and we'll also be talking about what the Steelers need to do defensively. But one thing that the Chargers really did last week against the Browns is that they used the run to set up the pass. Phillip Rivers only completed 10 passes that went, you know, more than 10 yards last week, and over half of them came after a run play that gashed the defense for 4 yards or more, and then the Browns were trying to sort of counterbalance it and stop the run. Shazier is going to be huge because one of the things that kept killing the Steelers last week with Forsett was that the Ravens were running to the backside away from the strong side of the defense, and Sean Spence was not able to make the play. If Shazier and Timmons are able to lock up the middle and cut down those run plays, it's going to become a lot more one-dimensional for Phillip Rivers, and he's going to have to throw to Keenan Allen and, excuse me, Stevie Johnson. What the Chargers will really try to do is they try to confuse you to get the one-on-one coverages and then test you deep. Like you were talking about Phillip Rivers earlier, he doesn't throw the perfect deep ball. He does just enough to throw it so that his players can get up under it and make a really good play on the ball. With Allen, this new guy with Darius Green, a tight end, and Antonio Gates, can the three of them do. Now, if the Steelers can get in his face, cause some problems, I think it's going to be a long day for them. But I do see the Steelers make some turnovers. As much as people want to talk about the secondary, our secondary has more interceptions this season than the Seattle Seahawks do. I think that they're hanging in there for what we're working with, and I think we're going to see another pick this week and another fumble recovery. I think with more time in the offense, we're going to see some big plays bust open. The Chargers' defense is not a superstar defense. It's going to leave some big plays open. I think Bell has a nice day. I think Vic tosses two. Brown's gonna have a nice day again. I think Martavis Bryant won't have a dominant game, but I think we'll think he'll have a game-breaking touchdown play that we'll be smiling about on Monday night. So again, I got the Steelers winning 31-20. Mike Vick has a good day. Defense does let up some points, but they'll make enough big plays to keep the game out of reach from the Chargers.
Awesome. Straight across the board, every single one of us is picking the Steelers. That makes me nervous. I don't like that. Normally, Debbie Downer Lance is the one that picks the opposition, but we're all taking the Steelers. Make sure you check BehindTheSteelCurtain.com for all your Pittsburgh Steelers needs leading up to the game. We have a lot of previews coming up tomorrow, the film breakdown, the defensive issues in the run game against the Ravens, as well as a preview of the San Diego Chargers. We're going to get talk prediction specials. We're talking about what the experts are taking, you name it. It's going to be on BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, so make sure you check that site early and often. Thank you for listening. Make sure you also check out our final score show after the Monday night game to talk about how the game played out. Do the Steelers go to 3-2? Do they fall to 2-3? We'll find out on Monday Night Football with Mike Tirico and John Gruden. I like that guy. All right, everybody, for Jeff, Chris, and Lance, we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Bye.